dedicated to HBO's Game of Thrones and George R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire book series. You're listening to Podcast Winterfell.
Welcome back, everybody, to Podcast Winterfell. We got a great show for you tonight. This is going to be our little Season 7 preview cast. With me tonight is DJ Tim Hines, Tracy, Heath, and Michael. Donald has not joined us this evening, but he will be podcasting with us. We do want to remind you that Podcast Winterfell is part of the DVR Podcast Network. Let's just jump right into it. We got a lot to talk about. We're what? It's Wednesday, so we're Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yes, I am counting on my fingers. We're like 4 or 5 days away from Season 7, and I'm super excited. Let's see. Tracy, you had a good idea to kind of start us off, so let's just kick it into high gear and start talking about Game of Thrones.
Sure. What I thought would be really cool is for us to talk about the last season and kind of talk about maybe our high points and our low points and look forward to what we might want to see out of those storylines, or maybe what we can hopefully be saved from the storylines that we didn't like so much.
I dig it. I dig it. All right, let's do it. So I'm going to pick one person. We got five on the cast, and I didn't really do a round. Everybody say hello. Well, let's do that then. Tracy said hello. DJ Tim Hines, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm pumped up for the season, and I'm ready to do some podcasting and hopefully get some callers in and have a great time.
Fantastic. Mike Hull, how you doing?
I'm very well. I'm looking forward to resuming a storyline about politicians you can murder.
Oh, nice. Good way to start the show. All right. We're already in trouble. Heath Snowlow, the bastard podcaster. How you doing?
Fantastic. I'm resurrected and ready to rock this season 7 with the new crew. The small council has dissolved and we all become Winterfell. Baby. Well,
it's pretty awesome that all of us are on this show. It's a lot of people. I can't remember the last time we did a podcast that there's five people on it. And with Donald, it's six. I think it's awesome. Again, everybody, I should say, we're going to be doing three shows a week. Heath and I on Sunday night, Initial Reaction, DJ Tim Hines, the fan call-in show on Talk Shoe on Monday nights. And Tracy, Mike, and Donald are going to do I guess you guys are going to kind of figure it out, like book reader slash rewatch deep dive cast that we're going to do later on in the week. It's probably going to drop on like Thursday. So three podcasts a week. It's going to be crazy. But all right, Tracy, you had the idea. Why don't you start us off?
All right. So, you know, I'm going to start off with everybody's favorite mom, everybody's favorite leader, good old Cersei. You know, it's my little bit of a hot take in the sense that we need to look at Cersei maybe a little bit differently. I really liked her story last year, and I'm not calling it a King's Landing story because at this point there's really no reason because just about everybody else is dead. So I'm just going to call this the Cersei storyline. And, you know, I kind of focused on her because, you know, she's someone who is smart and ambitious, but she never really could do anything that she wanted to do because she was a woman. And she used the men in her life to kind of assert her power in any way that she could. But I think once Joffrey died, she kind of got knocked off her game and she became kind of vengeful and jealous, and her decision making got a little clouded, and, you know, she kind of started tiptoeing into just pure villain land. And all the men in her life started to kind of push her to the side, wanting her to go back to Casterly Rock or get married and have more babies, or, you know, go to the Reach and marry Loras Tyrell. And, you know, I think she just kind of felt everything slipping away. And, you know, last season she saw an opportunity, right? She kind of saw that the High Sparrow situation was way out of hand. She couldn't control it. He outmaneuvered her, Olenna and Marjorie were, you know, giving it back to her as well as she gave to them. So she seized this opportunity and basically cleared the board. And I feel like we have a villain now that actually has some complexity. She's not like a Ramsay. She's not like the Mountain, who are kind of flat and they're just evil for evil's sake. And you don't really understand, you know, like what they're doing or why they're doing it. I mean, with Cersei, you have somebody with like this motivation. Now she has to hold on to this power. She has real obstacles because the people in King's Landing that survived, I can't imagine that they're going to have any respect for her, not any real respect. I mean, they'll probably fear her. But, you know, how can she really hold on to the rule if people don't want to follow her? And then if, you know, our friend from across the water comes by, you know, that's really going to complicate things. So I'm super excited to see what's going to happen and like how much time is going to pass. Are we going to pick up right from where the coronation, or will there have been some time for the people of King's Landing to decide, you know, do they like her, do they not like her? So that's kind of what I'm thinking about.
Yo, I love that, because you just took a Cersei deep dive and it really got me thinking. All right, let me throw it around. DJ, anything you want to add to what Tracy had to say?
Well, that's part of the intrigue that I think is going to be the best part of season 7. And I love the way Cersei's, you know, season ended last year, because not only did I get exactly what I wanted to see, the wildfire being used finally and, you know, see the chaos, but now it puts her in a whole new position with, you know, totally opposite of where she was. And she's vengeful, and I somehow don't think she's going to last the season. And I'm like anxious to see who kills her.
Yeah, that's what I liked about what Tracy said, is I have been thinking I've been thinking that she might be dead in like the first episode. But then again, I ended last season by saying that I think Cersei is going to be the last person who ever survives, because I always think that she's going to die and she always survives. So I like the kind of like what I like the idea that you brought up, that she is a complex bad person, you know. It's not, and I actually think that they added that to the White Walkers too with their origin story, and I think it's kind of cool that instead of a television show devolving, it's evolving. Instead of getting where so many shows go through so many iterations of the bad good, that by the end the bad guy is just somebody, you know, just like a kind of in like a James Bond type character who's just like, just wants to rule the world. And on this, we're seeing people evolve. Mike, anything you want to say?
Yeah, this is the best podcast. We just started with a like more or less supportive statement about Cersei. Like, you begrudgingly just called her a villain. You start with like a feminist critique and it sounds kind of positive. And then you're like, you know, she's a bad guy, I guess. But I mean, you didn't really like Olenna anyway, right? I think that's a pretty amazing way to start. So what do you think is going to happen for her then? Sorry, I'm skipped. I just totally skipped Heath's reaction.
Woo!
Well, I mean, I feel like she's just going to basically be getting handed loss after loss. I mean, she's in over her head. I mean, Jamie's face at the end of season 6 was basically like, what have you done? You know, I think she's smart enough to rule in the right circumstances, but these are not the right circumstances, and she doesn't even know how bad it is, right? So, because remember, King's Landing doesn't care about anything else that's going on in Westeros, right? They're so insulated. So once A, the weather changes, and B, all these other adversaries start pushing down on her, she's going to struggle.
Do you think that she is going to claim, you know, she's going to take credit for the explosion, or do you think she's going to act like it was a accident that nobody could have predicted.
I hope she leans into this, right? Like, I want her to, I don't think it's something that she'll brag about, but I think that she will use the information when she needs to. So if she needs to intimidate someone, she will be okay with them knowing what she's capable of. But maybe publicly, she might kind of be a bit aloof about the whole thing. Mm.
I love that. I think that that's something learned from her father. Maybe she'll actually start doing and following through with some of that stuff, you know? Solo, what do you got?
All right. Well, I'm very intrigued with this storyline. My big thing is her oppositions. I mean, how is Danny and her crew, what is going to happen? Is Lady Olenna, she just lost her grandkids and everything. Is she going to team up with somebody else? Is she going to go after Cersei? But again, my big thing is the Jaime aspect. Like Tracy said, the look he gave Cersei. And my old theory from way back when, that I still believe Jaime Lannister will throw Cersei out a window like he did Bran. I'm sticking to it, baby.
Yes.
I love it. Oh, no, dude, Olenna, wasn't she on the boat? Well, isn't Olenna on the boat with Danny?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh.
Because I have not, I didn't rewatch yet. I'm planning on actually doing it in the next couple days, just the last season. But I was trying to think back, like, where are all the characters? And then I realized that it's like, Sam's here, John's here. John and Sansa, Arya's there, and then everybody's on a boat with Danny. You know, there's like,
oh, it happened in like 5 minutes. Everyone got on.
Yeah. Remember that last shot where, like, all of a sudden, like, they kept on going around the boat, and it was like everyone else was on the boat with her?
That's right.
A lot of people
on
a boat.
I think you're over-remembering. I think that you're putting everybody you can't remember on that boat.
Wait, who's, look, Olenna was on the boat, right?
Well, Tyrion. No, I know four Tyrion? Of them were on the boat. I don't remember seeing Olenna, but she was definitely in Dorne with Varys, and Varys is on the boat. So
right.
I don't know.
He's on the boat. So weren't one of the sand snakes on the boat?
I don't remember.
I just remember the Ironborn were with her, Theon and Yara.
Okay. And then, right, Theon and Yara. So, Michael, that is a bunch of people were on the fucking boat. Come on, admit it.
I guess that's everybody.
Yeah, they may run into
there
Gendry,
is a
right?
lot
Gendry.
Of people on that boat, bro.
Oh, you forgot Richard Dreyfuss, Roy Scheider, Robert Shaw. They're on the
boat. Because they're going to need a bigger boat. Yeah. That was great. That was great, Solo. All right, Cersei, yeah. Yeah, man, it's, you know, now I think that what Tracy, to jump onto what you were saying about her might, you know, her being very challenged, I think that I still think that Euron is going to come and make friends with her. And I think that that might lead to something between her, a way, it's also a way to get Jaime out of there. And I hear crickets, and I don't know if that's because nobody who knows to talk, or like in the preview, you see something. I haven't watched anything. I haven't even listened to any podcasts about this. Is like the first time I'm really even thinking deeply about this for in many months.
I think we're all quiet because that was just like crackpot theory.
Oh, you really? What do you think, Solo?
I was quiet because I'm trying to be professional this season, and I don't want to talk over anyone. So what do I think of what, Euron?
Yeah, Euron and Cersei.
Wait, yeah. Can we call him Euron?
No, it's way funnier.
Axel's been calling him Euron since E7.
Okay, wait, no, excited. Hey, look, I'll try it, okay? Euron. I'm sorry, I am from New Jersey. That's kind of hard for me.
Excuse me, I'm still in New Jersey.
That's true, okay. You were born in New Jersey, right? Were you born in New Jersey?
Oh, yes.
Okay, me too. All right, cool. Euron, what do you think of Euron and Cersei getting together, Solo?
I think that is if Cersei is going to make through part of the season or make it through the end, I think that would be her best alliance, because I think Euron would get things done that Cersei would want. I think, you know, the whole Dany and Euron thing would not work. I know he wants to, you know, have a little fun with her or whatever, but I think the Cersei-Euron connection is what we're leading towards. I really believe that.
Okay, cool. Not so crackpot, DJ.
Euron's dead. He doesn't last it through episode two.
Oh, damn. Prediction.
Whoa. Yeah, I think with Ramsay going down and Bolt Roos, I think we need some urine to add. I mean, we need some Euron to add to the, even though we got the White Walkers coming, but we need another, like, crazy badass that we hate. So I'm hoping he's the one. And if he teams up with Cersei, I think that would be, I don't know how it's going to happen, but that would play for some great TV.
Yeah.
Well, but think about it from a military standpoint. Like, he's building all these ships. What happens if everybody just goes on land? All right. So what does that mean? Like, you're like the big ship fare. Like, are they great fighters on land? Like,
he can protect King's Landing from the bay and from the ships that Dany has, while on the other side, Cersei has her people and who knows, Littlefinger? You know,
wait. So let's just, to a side note here, does anybody think that all 10,000 ships will be ready by this season?
Well, they're chopping down all the trees on an island that doesn't have trees, so of course they'll be ready.
I just got a text. Yes, they're ready.
Remember when he said he was like, he looked around and then he was going to say, take the trees out. And then he was like, take your houses apart. We'll use the wood because there's no wood left or it's all wet or whatever. I don't know why he said take your, you book readers probably know. Why did he say take your houses apart? Are there
because
no
trees? There's no trees.
Oh, I was right. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay. I used them all up already.
Okay, cool. Awesome. All right. Let's keep it moving.
And they don't have the wherewithal to invent styrofoam.
Yeah, I know, dude. Come on. Plastics. All right. Let's hit let's go with you, Mike. What's going on Tracy's premise? You're next.
I watched, you know, HBO just did the marathon, and I watched a embarrassing amount of it. And what I liked, I figured out that Gilly's my favorite character in the show because of all the terrible things that have happened to her. She just doesn't care. She's just like remains upbeat, you know, and awesome. But you can't really like care about her storyline because what's really going to happen, you know? I don't really know what makes sense there. But I also really enjoyed the Hound a lot, not just kind of the character that's always been great, but, you know, the storyline. He goes from coming into Winterfell like in the full Hound armor, you know what I mean, and he's protecting the king's kid and all this kind of stuff, and then you see him at the end in the book. He's a gravedigger, you know, but you see him actually with Swidgen, which was just wonderful, of course, to see the guy that played Val Swearengen, who I just love so much. So you see him there, like, really, he's become completely humble. It just was a really fascinating thing. And then also, I think he's going to end up killing his brother, right? I mean, why else is he still there other than the Mountain is, you know, been cast as this, like, ultimate supervillain, who can't even speak to explain his motivations. You know, he's just completely, and Qyburn sucks. And, you know, so there's all of that kind of, I think that he's going to end up being instrumental in those things, but they don't do anything. Nothing that they've done with the Hound has been like super simple or super boring. You know, the scene, you remember the scene where he's with Arya and she's reciting the list and, you know, they have this whole conversation about the list and about revenge and all these things. And then he tells her, finish the list, knowing his name is on it. Like, it just, there's a lot of like kind of deep stuff there, you know, and it's not the most visually interesting or whatever, but it seems like he's kind of becoming a philosopher and like outlining this, you know, philosophy of survival. And I don't know, I was just really Doug the Hound, and I hope he kills the mountain. And I, then that will land him right by Cersei, you know, so that, I mean, how that will all play out, I have no idea. But I'm just excited to see the Hound in this season and see like where he's at, you know, cause I don't, they were trying to get him down Darien, and those guys were trying to get him to sign up with him, which I don't think he's really going to do. He doesn't really seem to be a joiner, as he said himself. So that's what I want to see. I want to see the Hound finally take revenge for the burns on his face.
Nice. Hey, Mike, where do we, just to refresh my old memory, what was his last scene last season? Where was he? He was with them, right?
You start out and he's with the people who are building the Sept, you know, and it's Al Swearengen is there. That's just who he's going to be forever. And he's talking about how, you know, he doesn't necessarily know which god there is. He just knows there's a god, you know. And so was a bad man in the past, and he's trying to be a better man, you know. And he's talking to the Hound about all these things, and the Hound's like, you don't know what I've done. And, you know, they kind of have that, like, yeah, that's true, we're both badasses, but let's just try and feed the little old ladies now or whatever, right? And then some Brotherhood Without Banners rogues, right, like three guys who used to be with them but have gone solo, kill all the people from the Sept. And while this happens, the Hound is off chopping wood because that's how he meditates and takes out his anger. And then he hears them screaming, but by the time he gets there, they're all dead. So at this point, he's gone for like most of the episode, having renounced violence. And that was a long time for him. So he gets an axe and he leaves and he goes to try to find the Brotherhood Without Banners and these guys that had killed all the people from the Sept. And when he finds them, the other members have caught these three guys that have gone rogue, and they're going to hang them for being assholes, you know. And so when he comes walking up, the Hound says, like, I get to kill them, you know, because they killed my friends, right? And Dondarrion agrees to let him kill two of them, but he won't let them, like, fight them or chop them up. They're going to hang them. So he just walks over and he, like, calls them cunts and pussies and whatever, and he kicks the log out from underneath them and hangs two of them, and then Dondarrion kills the third. And after that, he hangs out with the Brotherhood Without Banners, and they try to talk him into basically kind of being one of them, but he doesn't want to do it. So, as I recall, there may have been something after that, but as I recall, that was basically kind of, he was trying to renounce violence, and then he decided not to. So the question then is who he's going to kill, you know?
Nice.
He went like 30 minutes. I was really proud of him, Frank. 30 screen minutes. That's like at least 2 weeks in Game of Thrones world.
Tracy, what do you think about the Hound?
You know, the Hound has been a character that, even though he's not on screen that much, right, there's always like a really good impact. They pair him with really great characters, so everything feels like it means something, whether he's with, you know, Sansa scaring her or with Arya. So the Hound's always been like a really great character, so I was happy when they brought him back. But I was never a believer in the whole Clegane Bowl.
Oh, she said it. I was going to see how long we could go without someone saying Clegane Bowl.
I was to say it after her.
Yeah, like I never, only recently have I started to think that maybe I was wrong about it. But I mean, in my mind, I just feel like under what circumstances would those two get together? And I mean, now that we see what the mountain is, I mean, he's like just a shell. I don't know, you know what I mean? Like the mountain as a human could have an opinion and see him and feel and respond. I mean,
good point.
Wouldn't Cersei have to like sick him on the, or like, yo, or the Hound would have to do something to him to get him to react. I mean, that's just my guess.
It's a total, you know what, yo, it's a total Lenny situation, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? Of Mice and Men.
Yeah. Lenny. He's going to squeeze them.
Yeah. Meaning that, like, you bring up a fantastic character point, which is that is not his brother anymore. His brother's dead, you know? And it does take away some of the meaning from it. And I almost feel like if upon seeing what condition he is in, the Hound would just turn away and be like, why even bother?
He's going to kill him.
What? Of course he's going to kill him.
Even if he just like, you know.
All right. Say we hang him, then we kill him.
All I'm saying is I could see that because there's no. Just think about that. If you have some vendetta against someone who did something to you and it's so personal and it's your brother, and then you see them and you realize that they are like the walking dead, it changes your opinion. He's already dead. By the time he would see him, I would suppose maybe more of this stuff, you know, the magic. I mean, he sees it with the brothers, right? So I don't know. I'm just saying I liked Tracy's point.
Wonderful.
It's great.
So we have, what, 3-4 Clegane Bowl, 2 against?
Yeah. Go ahead, Heath. It's up to you.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, as much as everyone's wants the Mountain versus the Hound, I'm curious to see if Arya and the Hound meet up, what would happen. Because she left him there to die, and that was the last time they saw each other. So I'm curious about that, because I enjoyed that storyline with the two of them for a couple of seasons, and now I'm wondering, and what side is the Hound going on his own? Is he joining someone? Because when we last see him, he left the Brotherhood without banners. They wanted him to join, and he's like, hell no, right? And he's on his own.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious, what his is he going out for revenge, and then like you said, he sees his brother. You know, will he have a change of heart, or along the way, will something happen? You know, so that I'm actually excited for that storyline, but I really am intrigued if him and Arya, and now with Arya with her new skill set, that'd be interesting to me. DJ?
Yeah, I just don't see it, like, because he had his whole like calming down time, his transformation where he was like getting at peace, and then that all got ruined. And now he's just going to be back to the old Hound. He's going to kill somebody. He's going to kill somebody big. It might not be his brother. It might be Cersei. It might be somebody in that circle, but he's going to get close because the Brotherhood, I think he might like hang with them for a little bit, maybe part off, but he's definitely not a joiner. And they've led us to believe like completely that he wouldn't do that. So I just don't feel that that's in his character. On the Arya thing, I doubt they'd run into each other again. It just seems like they're in different areas. Could be, but yeah. I don't think that serves a purpose. I think their time together is finished. I think like her leaving him for dead was her way of saying like, if you live, you live. If you die, you die, but you're off my list.
I just looked it up on this thing called the internet. It's neat you guys should learn about it.
You have that?
The last sentence says, later, while eating with the Brotherhood, Varric reminisces on his previous fight with Sandor and convinces him to join their cause as they are heading north to counter the coming White Walkers. So that definitely plays into Tracy's point about how on they would meet up, because that's the opposite direction.
Well, I think right.
I don't care. I want what I want.
Yeah, I think it would. But it's like what we're all saying is, I think what he was kind of saying is, I'll tag along. He wasn't joining them per se. He was kind of traveling with them, you know? That's what it seemed like to me.
Take them out when they're all sleeping.
Nah, I don't know, man. You're a vicious guy, DJ Tim Hines.
You really are.
It's that New York attitude.
We're talking about Game of Thrones. Like, what's they pushed a kid out of the window in the first
episode. I know, but I don't know.
And that was like the nicest thing I think the show has done.
this is why I'm here, man.
Hey, it worked out well for Bran in the end. You know, he got magical powers.
Great. He's right? Probably so much happier.
A lot of happy. He's magical now. Everybody wants to be magical. All right. Let's see. Let's keep it moving. Does anyone have any? I think we've all kind of talked about the Hound here. Let's throw it over to you, DJ. What's your thing?
All right. I don't really have a thing. so much as, you know, what I'm hoping for next season. You know, I was just kind of last season, the things that I was happy about, I just wanted to touch on, and we kind of did already with the wildfire. I love that. I still want to see Melisandre die. I want to see a lot of people die this year and make it even smaller for and more interesting for season seven. But I mean, season eight, rather. But it just like there's so many things that happened from last year that I was so psyched about that I kind of lost a lot of where I could predict. So I'm just kind of like feeding off of what you guys are saying tonight, because I tried to like really think about what I liked, and everything I liked like kind of happened. You know, obviously the Arya thing could, you know, things could have been paced differently, but it's all lining up to almost exactly where I feel comfortable with. So, and I that's why I feel like Cersei's ready to go. Like, it's a perfect time for her. The Cersei thing was a great way to start the show, because I feel like most of what I was thinking was about based around the Cersei thing, because everything's like leading to that. And like the Dany stuff is too, I don't want to say predictable, but like too, like you could see where it's headed. So like, we don't need to really speculate too hard on that. I feel, you know, I just basically, you know, I'm just kind of feeding off of you guys. I want to see a lot of death this season. And
you're feeding off of us and you want to see a lot of death this season.
With this podcast, okay. I'm just kind of like, and it's what you guys have thinking about that. But what I'm hoping for is just a lot more people to die.
Wow.
Okay, I do want to say what I love. You said something great, though. And can I say? No, but you made a great point, which is a lot of people have been talking about that they did pace it out great. And backing on to that to kind of throw out what DJ said to everybody else is this kind of idea that this whole war of people is going to end this season and next season starts the final war. What do you think about that idea, DJ? Do you kind of see it? Do you think that's how they've set this up?
That's kind of exactly what I was saying. Like, thin out the herd of all these awesome characters we grew with, but we're going to compact all the powering forces that can actually fight the White Walkers. So like all these side stories that we loved, which are amazing. Like last year, just think about the fire took out like basically the whole Tyrell story. So like now we're that's gone. You know, most of the Sand Snakes killed Oberyn and Oberyn's brother. What's his name? Dorian.
Doran
and the son. Like that's all kind of cleaned up. Like now we're gonna make room for like the masses to team up and fight other masses, take out some head people, and then the main cause. That's what I'm hoping for anyway for season seven.
Yeah.
Season eight.
Cool. What do you think, Mike?
I mean, I don't see how else it could be, right? I've just been thinking about it in terms of like how, because you're not, unless you're going to compress the white, it just, I don't see how else that could possibly work. And in terms of the way they like to end seasons, you know, on like big swooping dragon shots and stuff, somebody should do that. Somebody should make a supercut of the dragons traveling across. traveling across the world, you know, on their way to the wall.
Dude, I'm
going to
check that.
That's probably how it's going to work, and I think it's going to be completely awesome.
Cool. Yeah. Oh, wait, but I have one idea what they could do differently, but Tracy, what do you think about this idea?
Well, I think you kind of nailed it in terms of the people war being now, because, I mean, as long as that wall is there, it's kind of like buying time. In a sense, where even if the White Walkers are trying to make their way, you know, that shield, that final piece is in place. So, and it doesn't look like anything is really happening up north, that far north, right this second. So I think until something is going on there, the White Walkers are kind of going to still be something for later.
Solo.
Yeah, that makes sense, because I think we're going to have, ever since the beginning of times, who wants to be on the Iron Throne? And I think we're going to get that as Cersei is now, but we'll see if Dany gets there or not. And then we'll probably have some frontline stuff or the preparation, maybe messengers come at the end of the season to warn whoever's queen or king now that the real war is coming, and then that sets up that final crazy season. I didn't even think about that until the podcast, and that makes the most sense instead of combining them both, because then if you're having a White Walker war and the war at King's Landing, it just, I think it'll fit better if we take care of King's Landing first and then the final wall that we're all excited to see comes ahead of us. So, yeah, I'd have to agree. I think that would make it. And I think for production value, I mean, imagine if this was just one season, how crazy it would be in 10 episodes. So I want an educated guess why they split it up is because that's what they're doing.
Yeah, I like it. Now, I did want to throw this out, Mike, because when you said that, I've been thinking about the same thing, right? Like, how could, like, alternatively do it? Because it does seem, as you said, pretty obvious that this whole whoever's the king or all that shit is figured out, and then they fight the real war, and that's the entire last season. But one thing I was thinking of is, and maybe I'm being crackpotty, but that a person would team up with the White Walkers.
Like a sellout, like a Baelish type character?
Yeah, I mean, look, like, we know their backstory now, right? They were human. This Night's King guy was human. Now he is not human anymore, and it's been, I don't know how many, like, thousands of years or whatever. But it's a possibility if some human has something magical, or I don't know. I'll go ahead, Mike.
They had kind of a working relationship with Craster.
Yeah, good point. Yes, you're right. So, I mean, that's great point. Fuck, I love it, Michael. That's fucking awesome. Well, you're right. They've shown that they've done that before. So
I have been very skeptical about this idea of the wall coming down. All along, the way the wall is described, especially in the first couple books, like, it just, that just seemed totally impossible to me. But the longer we go, the more that seems like a possibility. And, you know, if that was something, I mean, that might be a way for, you know, you've got the free folk coming on the other side of the wall. John led all the free folk on the other side of the wall. And if you've got that one person, I don't know what they need to actually bring the wall down. Maybe it's, you know, the dragons show up and they're supposed to be helping, but the first thing they do is something not very good, right? Which is, you know, break the spells, because the idea is that the wall contains spells. So I don't think it's like you have to, like, melt, you know, every square foot of ice. I think right. The idea is if you can, you know, if you can in some way break those spells, it'll essentially, you know, kind of shake the whole wall down at once.
And now they're connected to Bran, that might have something to do with it.
Right. That might have something to do with it.
Bran has the mark, right? I mean, we've talked about that so much at the end of last season. Is Bran going to go be faced with the idea, like a catch-22? The only way I can save the people is to cross the wall, but if I do it, I'm letting the enemy through, you know? And it becomes him kind of caught in that, the same Hodor type situation, right? It's kind of a parallel to that. So it seems like that's an obvious thing that's going to happen too. But yeah, Mike, I heard that somewhere too. I mean, not being a book reader, but that the spells actually hold the wall up. Like it would be, it's like, it's not, it doesn't, it bends the laws of physics that it's that heavy and that tall.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. That's an interesting concept. Well,
they talk about it in the book, but it's also in the show. Like when Bran is with Uncle Benjen, you know, and Benjen says, like, it's not just ice, you know, I can't cross it. Right. And so it is the spells. Not only do they keep the wall in place, but they also have some sort of other thing that contains the White Walkers on the other side.
Right.
And
okay,
that's why
great.
You know, the free folk can throw a rope, right, and climb to the top or whatever. The White Walkers can't do that, and that's because of the spells. So when they're broken, it breaks not just the physical protection, but also whatever this Jesus stuff is.
So that's interesting, because all of a sudden I just get a flash, like, could Bran cross the wall and then put the spell back up? or kind of like be forced to hold it up for a certain period of time. Like, you could imagine that they're like, again, in a situation where he's like under it and they're trying to protect him while he keeps the wall up or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, my issue is just, what does Bran really know how to do? I feel like, you know, what was it? Max von Sydow? Like, what kind of teacher was he? Like, he sucks. I mean, what did Bran honestly like? Sure, story time was great. I mean, we got a ton of information by being able to see all the visions. But honestly, like, would Bran pass his final exam? I don't think so. Like,
yeah. Well, I remember him saying that too, right? Towards the end, I want to show you this. Remember, like, really quick.
Yeah.
So well, he can kind of give him.
Bran tells. Time. Yeah, Bran says, "I'm not ready," multiple times.
Yeah, but then also, isn't there the concept that he, by plugging into the Werewood network or whatever, he can educate himself?
I guess. I just don't feel like the show really fleshed all of the rules out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not coming from book stuff. Yeah, that's definitely a book thing that that is not in the show.
That would take like a couple episodes too to even like make it good.
Like, and to be honest, the book didn't give us that much either. I mean, I'm saying the show didn't do the job, but I don't really recall the book teaching Bran that much either. So I'm kind of just, I'm out there with you.
But that's a good storytelling device in a sense, because then we get to kind of learn as he does and see it in action. So we're told through action instead of just a dump of information. Like, perhaps he'll surprise himself in what he can do. Mm-hmm. And we'll be surprised.
Show, don't tell.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, cool. Let's keep it moving. Solo, what's your thing?
Yo. Well, yeah. Well, I had a theory I was going with after I go through it, and you kind of touched upon it, but I'll add a little to it. I remember way back when, before we were even on podcast Winterfell and Small Council, we had that emergency pod on the film list, proud member of the DVR podcasting network. And when Ned Stark died and we had that emergency podcast and we went on and talked, and me and you, Axel, were both like, Jon Snow's the key to this whole thing, you know, and we didn't read any books and that was kind of our thing. And so when Jon Snow at the end of season 5 gets killed, it was like my jaw dropped. And then, of course, there's all speculation in the off season. Oh, he's going to get resurrected by Melisandre or somebody, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And it's going to be fine and all that. And so when it did happen, when he did get resurrected, I know a lot of people, because a lot of people predicted it. I guess it wasn't, from what I remember, it wasn't that big of a deal. People like, oh, we saw that coming. But to me, it still was. And I was glad to see Jon come back. But at what cost, of course. And he seemed to be kind of normal and kind of the same guy. And, you know, so I want to see more there. But what I'm really excited this season, I mean, I go back to Hardhome when the Night's King and Jon Snow both look at each other. And, you know, he resurrects the dead and Jon Snow is looking at him. And I really believe that there's going to be that big fight with the Night's King and Jon Snow. I just see that coming. I hope it comes. I want to see some amazing thing happen with that. But my theory is, now you had talked about what if the Night's King aligned with a human, and you talked about Craster, but I think there's got to be someone bigger than Craster. So what if, this is kind of my theory, what if the White Walkers are coming, the Wildlings and Jon Snow and the boys are kind of trying to fight them off. And what if we all kind of think, oh, Dany's going to take over the throne. What if Dany doesn't get there? Cersei stays on the throne, and Cersei this whole time has an allegiance with the Night's King. And they're basically, so you're caught in this sandwich of, oh, wait, you're on their side. And then it really is a cluster F. So that's kind of like my crack potty thing. I haven't ironed it out, but I'm just curious that what are the White Walkers? Do they just want to kill humanity and take over, or are they aligned with someone? And it's going to be one of those things. That's what's really intriguing me. Is it all out war, you know, ice versus human, or ice versus fire, or whatever, that we're everyone thinks we're going to get? Or is it a little different than that? Is it going to be, because, you know, Game of Thrones, DJ can, and everyone get back, Game of Thrones isn't your typical great things happen at the end thing. So I'm really intrigued at the possibilities of not just a White Walker war, but something more about it, some allegiance, something going on than just the war to save humanity. Though that would be cool, and I'm sure it would be fantastic. I just feel like there's got to be something more. Just as long as it's not the sand snakes, you know, being a big part of it, then I'll be fine.
All right. That's interesting. Yeah. And I find in what you're saying, the idea that even if they are setting it up that the last season is like, you know, the final fight with the White Walkers, doesn't mean that we're not going to learn anything about them this season.
You know? Right, right.
And that you're right. That I like your idea that they could become part more of the central plot line. And one thing I think about is and the more I think about their origin story and the Craster thing, the more it makes me think that it is really like they are fighting for their very survival. They need humans to continue. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we know that we suspect that they can live a very long period of time. But I do like the idea that you're getting at too, that there is something more to this than just the good guy versus bad guy, because I mean, I think we've all said all along that is very un Game of Thrones. Like, you know, it's more like gray areas. But Cersei joining up with them, that would be kind of interesting. I mean, I would think she would do it, you know? I mean, I think she would do it. You know, I'm sure that if the White Walker sent her an email and said, we have a White Walker attorney who wants to meet you, that Cersei would be like, let's meet 3:00 at the tower.
At the tower.
You know?
You know,
and they probably meet. And they might not find out any information, though. And that means that she was just taking the meeting.
Yeah, well, if it were to happen, I think Cersei might be the only one that would try to strike a deal. I don't know how that meeting would go, but I just like Dany, if she ends up taking over, I can't see her. I see her attacking them versus striking a deal with these, you know. And also, I have a quick question. Though they went dormant and they come back, is there a time limit, you think, on how long they can be out there? Or is that what they're trying to do so they can live this way forever? Or is it when winter goes away, then they have to retreat? Is that what do you guys think?
I know that there's this thing where they say like, they don't know, no one knows if the winter brings the White Walkers or the White Walkers bring the winter. So there's the, like deep in the lore, it's sort of like this confusion about, you know, like a chicken or egg thing with the cold weather and the White Walkers.
My feeling has always been that they have been presented as though it's some kind of like cicada type thing. Right. You know what I'm talking about? Where like they go.
I know John Cicada.
Oh, OK.
I don't know.
You know. Okay.
The things on the trees that they leave their shells.
Exactly. And they go underground and then they come out of the ground every like 7 years.
17, I think.
Oh, okay. They're different. I know in North Carolina and Jersey, they're like different places, different time periods. But that's the way I've always seen that's the way I feel the show has portrayed them. Not being a book reader, what Tracy said is what I've heard. That it's that there's a whole question of where have they been for all this time. My feeling would be that my hope, my greatest hope would be that we see a like White Walker city. You know what I'm saying? That there's some evidence that they have a society.
That, why are you people trying to make them into like relatable characters? This is so weird.
Why? Oh, interesting point. I love that, Mike. Why do you find that weird?
Because fuck those guys. Like, they're psycho ice demons. They should all die. I don't know. Because they reanimate corpses and everybody's scared of them. And it's just really weird listening to you try to make them relatable.
Well,
that's just really like, I find it. They are kind of like the only respite that we have in this show, right? Is that like there's this unmitigated bad. And the only problem with it is convincing people who have never seen the snow that it's real. Right. And they're doing that from the beginning. They're saying like, no, really, he killed one, you know, da, da, right. So this idea, I don't know. I kind of.
But the origin story.
I don't necessarily want them to be complicated. The origin story changes nothing.
Really?
The origin story changes nothing. And I'll tell you why, because it's presented by the Children of the Forest in an apologetic manner. They're saying like, look, we realize now we shouldn't have done this. You know, nuclear weapons seemed like a cool idea when we were going to drop one on Hitler's head. But now that it's coming for us, I'm really sorry that we did that. So to me, that doesn't make them more interesting because it didn't present to me that any of their decisions or any of their actions have been choices made for any good reason. It seemed like they were essentially designed to be warrior slaves of the Children of the Forest that got out of hand. So it really, more than anything, the effect of it was to just take away whatever respect I used to have for the Children of the Forest that once seemed so pure.
Hmm. Yeah, like they let the genie out of the bottle, and they put the cork in it by building the wall and putting all those spells and thought it was good. But now they're coming for some kind of revenge or just to wipe out everything. But here's my problem with the White Walkers is that why are they only in Westeros? Like why is there no north up by like on the whole land where Karth is and where, you know, Meereen is? Like why is it just on Westeros? So like, and if that was really the big threat, like bounce, especially Euron. He's got 10,000 ships. He could take whoever he wants. Like, yo, you guys want to come? I'm going over here. Karth is empty right now, guys. There's a big vault I can put all my money
hey,
in.
Hey, DJ, did you leave New York after 9/11? That's why, you know?
You're a real jerk with that comment. That was, you know
I'm
what?
Just saying, it's the truth, dude. I was there. We were all, and Mike was there. You had to live with, you know, you got to.
It didn't get colder here, though. I don't like the cold, so.
Okay, well, I like the cold, so I guess I can't relate.
I know, and you left. Your peace. See you later. Yeah.
To a colder place. Yeah.
Well, he does. It is an interesting point, because my first reaction as you're saying that is like, well, that Karth is too far south. You know, it's just like Westeros or King's Landing, I mean, or whatever, right? But they're also, you know, they don't talk about it being at like Bear Island or anything else we have as an example of the North. It seems to be stuck on the continent.
Right. I guess, even the Iron Islanders are probably cool. They're like, yeah, you can't get us. They could like watch from the shore. Ha ha.
Which they totally would do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's boring there.
I don't know. I just want to say, Mike, that I find that really interesting that you said that. And I kind of understand where you're coming from. I guess that for me, I like a complex, like I liked getting to know Darth Vader's, you know, origin story. Not that I love the prequels, but we'd have to have Glenn on the podcast to talk about that. But
that doesn't make you like him as a character. Like it seems like you're talking about it.
No,
as if
I don't
you
like
want
Anakin.
Like
no,
them.
No, no, I don't want to like. You know what? You're right. I do. Maybe I'm like DJ Tim Hines or something. I'm a little bit got a little evil in me. But I like the white. That story really made
wait,
me
wait,
feel
wait,
for
wait,
him.
Wait, 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 wait. Whoa. In the Star Wars saga, I'm not on Darth Vader's side. This is a completely different animal.
Okay,
well,
now that we got the
very,
important
very
things.
Very negative picture of me. Okay, I'm like I'm a happy-go-lucky guy, but
I know,
this show has trained me to enjoy the darker side of things.
Yeah, you're right. You are house music. That's right, and it's love.
Boots and pants and boots and pants and boots and pants.
But I guess, Mike, that origin story had a real effect on me. And I've watched, it's funny because I've gone back and watched parts and I've watched that a couple times. And I just thought it was really just knocked it out of the ballpark. I just love it. Just made, it was something that I kind of was waiting, had waited for. And then when it happened, I didn't realize how much it changed my idea of the show. Because
but
I,
what about it brought you to sympathy?
Because he was just some dude and they just shoved the thing in him. And then he became, not only did he become something, something monstrous, but he became something in a way beautiful and powerful. And, I just see, I don't know, man, maybe it's the makeup or whatever, but I just see an intelligence behind the eyes of the Night's King when he's looking, when he was looking at Jon Snow, when he was at Bran, whatever. I just see another level there. And I just think it would be kind of kick ass if they became like, I don't know, I guess they say they're never going to speak. So I don't know how they could do that. Maybe they,
what do you mean they're not going to speak?
Sign language.
You know, maybe they do telepathically or something, but I don't know. I just thought that's interesting that you brought that up.
What do you hope? What do you? What would you like to find out that they want? Because what we're taught, what you're, I mean, this is all goes to motivation, right? I mean,
right.
It's cool, like when we see people do stuff, but what's interesting is motivation. So,
I think it would
do
be,
you want?
Okay, I think it would be cool if they said, like, we look at you humans and look what you do to each other. You enslave each other. You kill each other. You elect each other king. We don't do that. Like, if they came off, if he came off with almost like a communist vibe,
with
I think
the
that
Knights
would be kind of cool.
As his name.
Well, they called him that. He didn't call himself that. So I don't know. All I'm saying is I just kind of liked the deeper aspect if it could be like that. But I want to bring it back to what one thing Solo said is I do think it's a cool idea of Jon Snow and the Night's King having like an like a bat like a real battle, you know, like a lightsaber battle. I think that would be really freaking cool. So good job, Solo.
Glad I could help.
if wait, Snow gets the flaming sword, you know, and the other guy's got the ice sword. You might actually get kind of a lightsaber, a little, might kind of look like it if you like squint a little bit. You might get that.
But he has to have Valyrian steel, right? I mean, flame or no flame. He's got to have, that's the key, right? I mean, Longclaw and I guess, oh, Sam has one too now, right? So.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know if Sam's the man to wield it, but, you know, whatever.
And there's still two from, is there still two in King's Landing? Or Jamie has one, and what was Tommen's?
Did Brienne have her? Or she gave it back?
Oh, that's right. She gave it back, didn't she?
No,
she tried.
No, he wouldn't take it.
Oh, that's right. She tried.
He wouldn't take it.
She killed Stannis with it. Damn
oh, that's
her.
Right.
Plus, they still have the aspect of dragonglass darts.
Yes, we do.
Dragonglass darts. Hey, everybody. This is Axel. We're taking a little break here. Yes, as you may have guessed it, we are taking a break in the middle of the show to tell you that we are launching a Patreon. You can follow us at patreon.com/DVR, as in digital video recorder, patreon.com/DVR. We'll also put some links up on the Twitter, our Facebook page, podcast Winterfell fan page, and the website, DVR Podcast and podcastwinterfell.com. You know, we've been podcasting for almost 10 years. And we've set a pretty ambitious schedule for ourselves for this season of Game of Thrones with Podcast Winterfell. And we hope to continue after the season ends, not only doing more Podcast Winterfell, but with the DVR Podcast Network, doing shows like Westworld You know, we recently did The Leftovers. We're going to pick up more shows. We want to do a weekly show that just talks about television. By becoming a member, you're going to get Patreon exclusives. You know us. There's going to be emergency podcasts galore. We're going to try to release some podcasts early to you if you're a Patreon. And we also want your ideas. That's what we've always been about. We're very active on Twitter. We like to talk to people, find out what shows people like, what kind of ideas they have for podcasts. We really want to create a community. I want to create some message boards on our website, really get something going. But, you know, that takes work and that takes time. We can do it if you join with us at Patreon, patreon.com/DVR. It's going to be awesome. We're super psyched. Game of Thrones. Now back to my awkward transition. Peace. All right, cool. The White Walkers, a fascinating group of people. All right, so great transition there. all right, I'm going to go do my thing. And something that I enjoyed last season and I want to continue through this season is something I mentioned before, and maybe I'm treading over old ground, but it's something important to me that it sounds weird, but it's really what I'm looking forward to the most, which is I really am interested in the way they kind of reformatted the show and that's one of the things I'm looking forward in this rewatch is to see how they did it, because it is running like such a sleek machine and people are just popping up in different places, and the way they're doing it and the way they've kind of slowly got us used to what I guess we all call Littlefinger's teleporter, right? And the passage of time, and just hitting the big beats. That's kind of what I'm most looking forward to this season, which is the idea that each of these episodes is like a film, you know, like an installment of a story. And there's like almost no wasted scenes. There's no B plots that are annoying and you've already figured them out. They kind of, I think that the Jamie, first when he was with Bronn, and that was annoying, right? And then secondarily, what was he doing last season? I'm having a brain fart here.
He went to River Run and confronted the Blackfish.
All right, that was actually good. So that does not prove my point. So I liked that, actually. But it was another diversion, though, right, of facing Cersei and putting to rest the idea of their relationship or it being public or them being together. So to me, that's kind of what I'm most looking forward to. I'm looking forward to them doing a faster show where it does feel more like that dropping in than how it started. When you look back at the first season, it was really told like a very traditional drama. You know, you went from scene to scene, and when someone traveled or there was a large passage of time, it was made known to the audience through exposition. And they have pretty much eliminated that. And the one thing that to pick up on what Tracy was saying about to kind of flip it, something that I thought they originally did bad last season and I didn't want them to do this season, I'm now finding that I really liked, which is how Arya just pops up and kills the Freys. And initially I thought that that was too fast. It was pushed. I didn't like her story with the faceless men to begin with. So I think that negativity carried over, but the more I've thought about it, the more I like that possibility now. I like the possibility that we have to accept things are going on behind the scenes and we have to allow ourselves to fill in those spaces and trust them. And I feel like they did it well. And I'm really excited to see that. I don't know, Mike, what do you think about that?
I am, it's fine with me. I don't like, there's so much going on, you know, you'd have to have an hour a day to be able to explain all that shit and it would be boring. So I have released myself from all of my worries and fears. Like I had to do when we were doing the tandem read of the last two books that have come out, which it's just like, it's just so much, like you just can't think about it all at once. You know, you just kind of have to absorb it. And like the Arya thing didn't bother me a bit. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I liked all of her faceless men thing. I really enjoyed the scene of her killing the Frey. It was just wonderful, you know. And I'm excited to just see her go on a full rampage and never have to deal with any sort of psychological consequences.
Just like a true American, Mike.
And I'm the maniac.
Yeah, it's true, right? We all turn. We're all turning. So, DJ, what do you think?
I think that it is a welcomed change, the way they ran the episodes, because we got so used to the episode 10 thing, and they flipped that on us. And it was done so well the first, you know, five seasons that when season six came, like I was saying, what I'm hoping for, more death, they did kill off a lot of people that we were like, oh, where's this one? And where's this one? Where we asked for three seasons where the Blackfish was, you know, and finally, like, he comes out, you know, we get an end for him. We got an end for a lot of people. It tidied up the story. And now I like you, I do welcome this whole next, like, push of which should be mostly all, like, movement instead of more stoppage and learning, and, you know, other than maybe some things Sam's going to bring out. But, you know, there is, I keep feeling like the way we're talking about season seven is that it's like going to be like the end, because there's still an eight. So, like, what we're talking about could completely flip on its head and season seven, like, be something different. And, you know, we might not get any of the things we just talked about. You know, a couple of us may have seen the trailer. I'd seen them, but I didn't pay too hard attention because I know there's so many things that they're going to add. But last year they played almost basically episode one and two in the trailer, and the rest of it was kind of unknown. So, you know, they do trick us a lot. But I am looking forward to the pacing. Like, I want it to be quick. I want it to be just action-packed, filled with death, that we don't have to go to the funerals. We could just see them die. But, you know, I'm with you.
Cool. Tracy.
So what's interesting about this coming season is, you know, it's shorter, sure, by three episodes, but I'm sure you guys have heard this, that the episodes are, a lot of them are going to be longer than 60 minutes. And I think the finale is supposed to be like a short movie, basically.
Yeah, I heard it was like, I put a post on our Facebook page, which if you want to join it, you can, Podcast Winterfell. I think it's like 87 minutes.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting to think, you know, we're going to be moving so quickly, but yet these episodes are longer. So I'm really interested to see how that's all going to play out. I was one of those people that was really unhappy with Arya's storyline and kind of rolled my eyes at the Walder Frey thing at the end of the season. Because I was so busy thinking, like, well, you know, how long did it take for her to infiltrate and gain the trust and, you know, and I'm like trying to put the pieces together. And my thinking about how that takes away from the enjoyment is kind of why I also was team no trailer. I managed to completely avoid the second trailer. Cool. So that's good. And I'm kind of feeling like I'm optimistic, right? Like, I'm not waiting for anything specific to happen, which every other season I kind of felt, except for the first one, obviously, like I always felt like I knew exactly what was going to happen in each episode. And I was right probably half the time. I don't even want to do that, right? I just want to allow the show to entertain me. And I think I'll just have so much better time with it this season.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad that I haven't watched the trailers, because I almost feel like my, you know, I just, the visual aspect of it too is going to just blow me away. I know. The thing before we go to Solo, I just want to pick up from what you were saying about the reason why I came to like the Arya thing is for the exact reason that you said, which is all these other aspects of what she was doing. I felt like we saw that in the earlier seasons. And now that Arya is kind of, she is a faceless person now, right? I think that she has taken this on. We never saw how Jaqen could change his face. We didn't, you know what I mean? So that, which annoyed me, kind of made that mystery, I kind of dug it. It kind of gave Arya power that we don't need to see her be a pupil anymore because she's not. We just need to see her being a master and doing what she does, which is kill motherfuckers. And that's what we saw. And I like that.
And honestly, like, it doesn't even matter how long it took her to infiltrate and how she learned how to bake a pie. Like, who cares?
Exactly. Right?
Like, she did it. Okay.
Yeah.
So just watch her kill one of the worst people in Westeros and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, and also she, you know, Jaqen brought her into the school, but he didn't really train her. Right. And she literally killed her trainer. So she's ready to move on. You know, I mean, that's an allegory with a lot of history, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. All right, Solo. What do you think about what I was talking about pacing and quickening it up and all the like the shape of it and all that kind of stuff?
At first, I'm expecting high octane the whole season, but there's going to be some episodes that I think are going to be a lot of dialogue, and I don't think it's just going to be battle after battle, crazy banter, and that's it. I think the pacing, the last two episodes of last season were just amazing. And if we go along like kind of that pace, I mean, it may not be that. That's, you know, two of the best episodes of the series, in my opinion. You know, I'm with Tracy. I'll love every scene as long as Missandei and Obama Worm aren't talking about drinking games. Like, as long as we don't have that, I'm good. I'm ready. I'm ready to enjoy it and have fun. That's what I did with the last season of Lost. I know a lot of people had problems. I just wanted to just enjoy it and just enjoy the ride and not be so critical. I know we do a podcast, and we will, but I just... whatever they choose, I'm cool with. It's like you said, Axel, visually, I'm sure it's going to be amazing. And maybe it's the old age in me, but I'm just kind of like, entertain me, give me good story, some good dialogue, some good action. You know, I'm good. Let's just entertain me, baby.
This is a very American podcast today. Entertain me. Yeah, no, I, you know what, dude? I think really what you're talking about too, Solo, is confidence. And these guys have shown, I mean, quite literally, they are running the largest television show in the history of television, as well as perhaps this is the largest filmic enterprise ever that man has attempted. They're all over the world. They've got all these actors. The sets are crazy. They shoot outside so much. I don't know, Mike, can you think of anything that rivaled that? I mean, there probably are some Danish TV show that shot, you know, for 80 years or something, but I can't really think of something that was so like they're premiering this to the world on Sunday, you know?
You got to think about like, you remember when, they were making the Oceans movies or some of the Mission Impossible movies. And they talked about, you know, all the different places they shot around the world. You remember when Traffic, right? That was
right,
the
right.
Yeah. You remember when Traffic came out? And, you know, they talked about, you know, what kind of a big deal it was. Right. But those people all made one movie.
Yeah, like that's what I'm saying. Yes.
Episode after episode, season over season, you know, so it all those the things that stand on other big projects, I can't think of anything else, but I don't watch a lot of television, but
I think it's absolutely amazing. And that's why I always have a controversial thought, which is that I know the books are the original and they're something totally different from the TV show. It's not comparable, but as achievement of man, this TV show far outweighs the books in that respect. Like, it is such an endeavor. And I think a lot of the fans and such, maybe we all have to, like, you know, you take it in when you see those behind the scenes stuff and they're talking about how they have basically three different crews simultaneously shooting at different places around the world at the same time while they're editing, prepping the next episode. You know what I mean? It's like,
this is bigger than landing on the moon.
You know, I don't know. You know, someone could do a computational like thing about it, but it very well may be, right? Like, your iPhone could land you on the moon at this point. But anyway, that's cool. Cool. It's definitely going to be an intense season. And before we go, because that's kind of the end of what I wanted to say, I do want to do a couple round robin questions. If that's cool with everybody.
Can it be round robin Aaron questions?
Oh, I like that. See, DJ? Now you're funny. let's do it this. Okay. We'll start with you, DJ. All right. Who's gonna die? Go.
Cersei.
All right. Anybody else?
I'm gonna say no.
Mm-mm. Cersei's living.
Yep. Okay. Mike?
Cersei's going to die, and the Sand Snakes are going to die. Like, everybody from Dorne is going to die.
We could pick more than one?
Yeah. That's right. Okay, let me start again. I'm sorry. Let me start again. Mike, I'll let you... Let's start with Mike. Who is going to die? Of course, more than one. You can name more than one person. Mike, you go.
All of Dorne, like everybody we've ever heard of from Dorne, and they're all just going to be basically replaced by the horse guys, Danny's guys.
Dothraki?
Thank you. That took me way too long. Yeah, the Dothraki are basically just going to complete, and they're just going to tear it apart. Like, there's not going to be any more culture in Dorne for 1,000 years. And Qyburn, that's the other one that I think, you know, I'm interested in seeing what happens with him, but I think Qyburn's going to die. I think that that's going to be like, Qyburn's going to die and the mountain's going to die, and it's going to be part of the slow isolation of Cersei. And it's going to be great because I hate him.
Okay, so you think Cersei's going to make it out of this season?
I don't know. I like the idea of Jamie pushing her out a window before we're done, because really, like, I mean, if you think about it, like, at this point, if we're talking about the whole human war, right, who's really left to fight the human war? You know, it really, at this point, more or less comes down to Dany and Cersei, doesn't it? I mean, everybody else is a side player, because whoever would argue about that in the north are all focused on the wall. So I think it makes sense for her to die this season, and that's the end of the human war, and then they can all move north.
Okay. Tracy.
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of, you're making me rethink my whole Cersei's going to live thing. But if she dies, I definitely see it happening late. That's not an early death. I think some of our sidekicks are going to die. You know, like, I'm ready to say goodbye to Bronn. I'm ready to say goodbye to Podrick. Yeah, I think it's time. I mean, I don't know what more of a purpose they can serve beyond, you know, they're comic relief a lot of the time. They don't carry that much of the plot. So I've kind of resigned myself to let them go.
All right, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be more deaths. I mean, Sand Snake, sure. You know what I was really thinking? Brienne might go.
Oh, I thought the same thing.
I'm thinking she might go, but I can't think of what circumstance, because she does have that sword. So I'm not sure if we need her for season 8. You know, that's the only thing holding me back. But I feel like she might be on the block, too.
Okay. Okay. All right. DJ.
All right. Euron dies. Cersei dies. Qyburn dies. I mean, it's just so many. I just want to go. I think that Benjen's going to die. I think that... let's see, who else is going to... I mean, it's just so many. I'm so happy about this. I don't think Jaime's going to die. I think Tyrion will stay alive. I don't really... I could see one dragon going, like, for some reason. Just, like, maybe in one of the battles, trying to conquer something. I really, really want Melisandre to die. Like, especially at the order of Jon or Davos. Because they let me down last year. So she's got to go. And the Brotherhood, I'm still unsure about, because I really feel like the Hound is going to take them out, even though they settled the deal. I think he's going to like follow them and then just wipe them out. And that's going to be like a cool battle. I mean, there's so many other people that I think are going to die. I hope Arya kills a bunch of them, and it's going to be a bloody season.
All right. I say Euron, Brienne. Euron, Brienne, and who was my third person who I thought would die? I can't remember, so I'm just going to say it wasn't that important then. So to me, I think those are going to be the two big people that are going to die. But I think when you say sand snakes and stuff, I could see, yeah, they've just obviously not done well with that plot, you know?
I want to add that speaking of the sand snakes and Dorne, I really hope that whole Dothraki ruining the Dorne thing happens. That'd be so cool.
Can I ask a question real quick? Have you explored the origin in your childhood of your distaste for Melisandre? Like, what do you think? I mean, I don't particularly care about her, but what do you think the driving urge of your hatred is?
I didn't know her in my childhood to really fully answer that, but what I really just don't like the way she shifts. She has, even though she has these beliefs, she flips on a dime on who could be the one, on who's got the blood, who's got the right stuff. She doesn't even know what she's doing. I think she took the power and she's manipulating what she learned and using it for her own will, and she's using it wrong. And when she killed poor little Shireen, that just put it over the edge. She has to go.
All right.
Sorry.
Right on.
There we go. That had nothing to do with your childhood, as Mike requested deep personal information. But that's okay, DJ. You deflected.
I didn't know her in my childhood.
Okay. Solo, please enlighten us. Hey. Who do you think is going to get the axe, baby?
All right. Cersei will die, but not till episode 1, season 8, when Jaime pushes it out the window. Perfect mirror image of episode 1 of season 1.
Love it.
Okay. Lady Olenna, dead. Theon, dead. The Mountain, dead. Brienne, dead. Sansa, dead. Damn. Wildlings will die. That's it.
Wait, all the wildlings or some wildlings?
No, just some random wildlings.
Wildlings will die. I love it, dude. I love it. Okay, cool. Okay. This is going to be... Here we go. We'll do another one real quick. At the final scene of this season, who will sit on the Iron Throne? Tracy.
Oof. Oh, man. Danny.
All right. Mike.
There will be no Iron Throne. The dragon's going to burn it because that's how it was made. And so they're going to destroy it. And she's going to stand in the middle of the fire that destroys the Iron Throne and not be destroyed by it. And that's going to be when everybody's like, okay, fuck everybody else. Like, this is what we're doing. That's when the moment when everybody believes in her.
Nice. Hmm. Solo.
Tyrion will be on the Iron Throne.
Whoa, how's that going to happen?
We think it's going to be Dany, and Dany's going to be like, you deserve it more than me. I just want to free slaves and go back to Slaver's Bay.
Whoa. That's interesting, no, dude.
That was a joke, but if
I believed you. No, but I mean, did, like, huh? Yeah, I did. Maybe she wants to go back to Dario 2.0.
Oh, Dario and Jorah. Where's Jorah?
Yeah.
Oh, Saeed Jorah. Jorah. Oh, is he going to die?
I don't know.
Probably.
I don't think so. I'm telling you, I think somehow that those creatures are going to figure into the war and they're going to be like soldiers or some I don't know. They showed them for some reason, the grayscale people.
The stone men.
Yeah, the stone men. I think that they're like the opposite of the White Walkers in a way. I don't know. I always thought that there's some balance like that, and then he'll come like bring them to. They'll somehow, like, you know, help. I don't know. I know it sounds ridiculous, but who knows? All right.
It's
Solo.
A show about dragons.
Yeah, that's true.
It's fine.
That's true.
Fine.
So, Solo, you really think Tyrion?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think eventually he will be the one on the throne. Yes. Okay. I just have this feeling.
I dig it.
I'm going outside the box.
DJ.
Once again, I'm going to have to lean with Mike Hull, and I think that it's going to get ruined somehow, and it's all going to be meaningless, and it's all going to start from scratch. And it might be, it most likely will be Danny standing in the leadership role, but I think that throne is like going to become a thing of the past.
Yep.
Season two, the dream.
Yeah. I always go back to that. I always think of that. The roof being off and the snow falling in.
But Tim, I think Axel said the end of this season, so I think that'll happen in season 8.
All right.
See, loophole. But that's just me. I like loopholes.
Okay.
And apparently throwing people out windows.
Yes. Who's evil now?
I'm going to have to go with Mike. I don't agree with that scenario. I like it, though. And I don't, and Solo, I do think this is the way this season is going to end, but I agree. I don't think anybody is going to be on the Iron Throne. I don't think there's going to be an Iron Throne, because I think that there's going to only be fight the White Walkers, you know? We still don't know what was that. A lot of people said that was ash from the dragons in that vision, but it could have been snow too, right?
Yeah.
It could have been snow, so Snolo, you should have know-owed.
I should have know-owed.
You know, but okay, cool. All right, I got one last thing to throw at you. Ready?
Throw it. Ow.
Who is the first scene going to be about this season? The very first scene of the show? Who is it about? What's happening? Solo, hit it.
Jon Snow getting the boys together to fight somebody. No, I think it's going to be Jon Snow is going to be the first shot.
All right, cool. Tracy.
King's Landing.
All right.
I don't know who's going to be in the shot. I think it's going to be something establishing the state of King's Landing.
All right, cool. Mike.
Is somebody in Dorne, you know, some character that we don't know and have never seen before, who just kind of is suddenly like, what the hell? And then, you know, they love Dragon Shadow. So that's the other possibility. I think it's you're either at, you know, Sept Ground Zero or you're in Dorne watching the dragons pop up.
Okay, cool. DJ.
First scene is going to be some kind of focusing in on the ship, the front ship landing or coming into the bay near Westeros of Dany's crew.
All right. All right, guys.
I'm laughing at your delivery. Not what is yours, Axel? Did you say?
I think that Sam at the, cause I think that's, we haven't mentioned that yet, but I think that that's going to be a fun thing this season. And I think that we're actually going to kind of start off with a little grounding of the war, the big war to come, by kind of having Sam being talking to like the Grand Maester about the history of the White Walkers or something like that. I just get that feeling that they're going to kind of want to do one of those intros where we're kind of seeped in the history and kind of take a look at what's going on. But that's just my feeling. I just thought that would be a fun thing to do. All right, cool. So I think we've reached about the end here. This has been a great podcast. Let's just go around. Everyone can do their final goodbyes and whatnot. And the next time you'll be, just kind of remind everyone, the next time they'll be hearing you, Mikey Hall.
We are going to record next week on Wednesday, so should be releasing on Thursday. We haven't done this before this season, so maybe it'll all be a spectacular failure, but most likely we'll be back Thursday. Looking forward to the show.
Awesome. Tracy.
Yes, I will be joining Mike on Wednesday evening. I can't wait for this season, and I'm super excited that it's happening during the summer where I can actually stay up late and enjoy
it. Yeah.
I am doing summer work, but it's nothing like actually teaching. So, yeah, I'll be putting my back into this, so I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. Solo.
Oh, I'm excited. I got my Game of Thrones, my Twin Peaks on Sunday nights. We'll be doing the initial reaction show, me and Axel Folo. It's going to be genuine greatness. You can follow me on the Twitter at Heath Actor, and we'll do our best to kick ass this season for you.
Nice, DJ.
All right, well, we're going to be kicking up the Fan Call-In show on Monday nights. We'll give you the deets to call in. It'll be through TalkShoe, and we're going to do a typical Fan Call-In like Podcast Winterfell's always maintained. And I hope you guys enjoy it, and looking forward to the season, and looking forward to talking to you guys and all the fans out there.
Fantastical. Peace. Yeah, baby. Yeah. This was really great. I mean, we had a lot of heads up on this podcast, and I think we all did a good job of listening and talking and all that. I know it can be tough when you have five people on a pod, and that's why we're not doing one podcast a week with six people. Because then everybody does not really get to, you kind of have your sections, the conversation's a little bit more stilted. I think three is the max on a podcast for me. I can't really, once you hit like four people, unless you're doing it like where we're doing it here, where it's kind of like call, get called on, raise your hand. It can be hard, but, yeah, everybody, thank you so much, for listening. We'll check you out next Sunday night, the initial reaction with Heath and I. I'm like super excited. I don't know if it's been a long time since I've been so excited to watch a television show, and this is going to be fantastic. So thanks again. We appreciate it.
Dara Gales and Juliana Margulies.
The recording has now ended.